My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for him in World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
That was a shooting gallery up there.
I could hear the tremble in his voice.
She suffered a fairly severe beating, and the video is pretty graphic.
Justice for us seems almost impossible.
It's not fun to watch somebody die, and they knew she was in mortal peril.
They have not asked the hard questions. Why was the Capitol intentionally unsecure that day?
The FBI had information about security concerns before January 6th.
They're out for blood, and they're getting it. They appear to be winning.
Were the actions of the Capitol Police out of line? Were there violations in use of force?
Now I describe it as an inside job.
I'm ready to do whatever God calls me.
There's an old Chinese saying my ancestors learned before the Communist Party took over our country. The family is the essential unit of human society, and that you must have honor and defend your family. But it's not always easy to do.
When the regime gives the order, you have to kill.
My heart was pounding. I felt my body bouncing and twisting on the floor. They put numbers on our shoulders, then separated us into rows of even and odd numbers. I was number 9. My brother, he's still in prison. And my sister, she was sent to a labor camp without a trial. But there's one piece of evidence they haven't been able to destroy yet. I left everything behind. If I can't expose what they did to us, then all of our suffering would be for nothing.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. I'm your host, Pastor Greg. You're listening to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. Did I say that? Yes, I did. Well, I'm very pleased to enter into this segment, and I want to get right to it. If you missed any parts of our first hour, Coach Joe Kennedy was with us. We talked about his case and how we now have religious liberty in the United States in a way that most people don't even realize. And I'll get him back on to talk more about that. And then Dale Holson, I got into the amendments on the Texas vote that is early voting ends today. And then the vote is on the 7th of November. Joining me now, though, and I'm very pleased to welcome both of these gentlemen to the program. Don Jans, of course, is my regular guest here on Fridays. He joins us as my co-host today. Don, welcome. Good to have you.
Thank you.
And our guest today is Dr. David Wormser. And as those of you who follow me know, Dr. Wormser and I have been talking a great deal about what's happening in Israel, including, and I just encourage you to go back and watch this, a 2.5-hour interview that he and I did on the day of the invasion, the 7th of October. We've done a number of interviews since then, refuting a number of the things that have been brought up in public by those that are attacking Israel from both sides of all of this argument. Dr. David, welcome. Good to have you.
Great. It's great to be here.
Don, I'd like to start with the question that you just asked him in the green room, and then we'll go from there, because I think that's a very important question that you asked.
My question was, we've been hearing that we're going to have a pause, cease. I'm not sure what it is, but supposedly the administration is saying that there has to be some kind of a relent or a let up by Israel. I don't know what they mean, and I asked David if he could explain it to me.
Yeah, you started seeing the president himself say that Israel should do a humanitarian pause to let in food, stuff like that, or to let in fuel into Gaza, et cetera. And also now Blinken, he's currently in Israel, just gave a press conference. It's very clear that's what the Americans are pushing. What you see here, there's two levels to this. One is the American political level. President Biden has a very big problem. If you look at what happened after he gave his speech that was relatively pro-Israeli 2 weeks ago when he was in Israel, his poll numbers, especially among Democrats, dropped 10% because the heart and soul of the energetic side of the Democratic camp is progressive and they hate Israel. So every move he makes that's more considered sympathetic to Israel, which for us would just be pretty middle of the road, but for them, for the progressives, is pro-Israeli, he drops in support in that crowd. On the other hand, there's a group of Jews tend to vote to the left, but they tend to be many of them are old school liberals who still imagine that the Democratic Party isn't controlled by progressives, and they maintain that fiction in order to continue to vote for the Democrats. Well, this now, the more he moves in the other direction toward pressuring Israel, he gets real trouble from both the Jewish vote, which isn't very large, but the Jews vote in very high percentages in key states, but more importantly, from the Jewish donor class, which is very active in the Democratic Party and funds a good bit of the Democratic Party activities. So he's literally, either he goes this way or that way, and he pays a huge political price. So what you see is his policies are driven now by this politics rather than anything on the ground. On the ground, in as much as it is driven by what's on the ground, you have to remember, President Biden is not really in control of his own administration. It's his staff that controls him. His staff is progressive, vehemently anti-Israeli, and they're trying to figure out a way to save Hamas. Even those who feel that maybe it's better that Hamas leave, they want to insert very rapidly the Palestinian Liberation Organization, the PLO, into those areas, saying, oh, this is just Hamas is the problem. So we get rid of them, we can go back to the happy days of two-state solution, and Abu Mazen and the PLO get to be now the rulers in Gaza and blah, 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 blah. So what you're seeing is a complete breakdown politically for Biden on this, or not breakdown, but ambivalence on this. And two, the slow assertion of the progressives over policy on the ground, which is essentially more and more distance from Israel and more vulnerability to the manipulation of Qatar, of Hamas, and of the Yasser Arafat. So we're seeing the divergence slowly happening in front of our eyes between America and Israel.
Very quickly.
If I heard you correctly, what you're telling me is that there is absolutely no principle behind these claims by the administration now. It's strictly politics.
I think it's politics internally, and it's the principle is the ideology of the progressives. Okay. That they're just not going to abandon their illusions of pre-October 7th, neither with the Palestinians nor with the Iranians. They still believe that nothing really changed, except for the fact that Hamas now went beyond the red lines, and therefore, if only the Israelis can carefully remove them, we can go back to our happy ways and nothing changes.
But there's many of them, David, that are marching out there that suggest that Hamas was only responding in equal terms to what they claim Israel was doing to the Palestinians. In fact, there are, you talk about the Jewish left, there are members of the Jewish left that have thrown themselves in, if you will, with the Palestinian sympathizers, presenting the public concept or the public idea that there are Jews in America that do not support Netanyahu and that do not support Israel, even responding to what Hamas did.
Yeah, you know, there's a very active debate right now in the Jewish community. You have the elements, the progressive elements, and whether it's Bernie Sanders or others, who are as awful as always. And basically, they made the clear point: their religion is progressivism, not Judaism anymore. And the other Jews, there are very active debates, and there's no excommunication in Judaism, but you hear a lot of Jews beginning to say that they're haram or cheren, which is they're removed. It's not excommunication, but it's just saying you can't consider yourself a Jew. If you're defending the beheading of a three-month-old baby, Jewish baby, and say that's legitimate, then you're no longer a Jew. So essentially, you see that divide. The Israeli left is in tatters and is very angry at the American left, even the Jewish left that does this. And much of the Jewish left is increasingly upset at the progressive left. It's their kids, you know, these kids being attacked right in universities by these Hamas operatives. They're usually very liberal. They're very to the left. They're core of the Democratic Party. Some of them even are progressives. And they're finding themselves that their adherence to progressive ideology didn't save them.
Is not saving them, right? All right, I want to push forward for a second to getting onto the ground in Israel, because yeah, one of the things you and I talked about and that you messaged me about is that there is a different attitude and a different coalescing in Israel from October 6th, October 7th to today. And I think it's what you just were kind of talking about. But tell me about how these events have maybe unified Israel, irrespective of where they may have been 20 days ago, 30 days ago.
Yeah, I mean, some of the philosophical differences are still there, but the bottom line is the Israelis, one really has to understand. I was there when Israel was attacked.
Yes.
I was there for, I came about 24 hours beforehand for a business trip that never happened. And I was there when they were attacked, and I was there for 3 weeks afterwards, 3.5 weeks afterwards. Mm. One cannot understand how much the Israelis feel that their very lives are on the line, how much they feel their country, if they do not emerge victorious and significantly and substantially strong from this. And they know they're limping. They know they were wounded badly. If they feel if they do not emerge from this stronger than when they entered by a lot, then the long-term viability of the state is no longer possible. So they are literally fighting in their mind with their backs against the wall and for their lives.
Right.
Which means that all these divisions have essentially taken a backseat. And also a realization that many of these divisions led them to, A, not see the threat emerging, and B, weaken them. So there's also a lack of patience with the continuation of any divisiveness inside Israel.
Talk to me about, go ahead.
But also the whole spectrum in Israel has moved to the right.
Okay.
They lived in a world of delusions about the Palestinians, about the world, about the position of Jews in the world, all sorts of things. And everything there has collapsed. Everything. And they now
realize... What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that?
Well, for example, they believed that they could deter their enemy. They could let him build up, but Israel's so powerful they could deter it. Deterrence completely collapsed. They don't believe in deterrence. Moreover, Israel has had essentially a defensive policy for 40 years. Ever since the 73 war, the exception of the 82 war, Israel essentially, if there's a threat, you build a defensive measure against it. If terrorism's coming in from Judea and Samaria, the West Bank, you build a wall to stop the terrorists. If they come under the wall, you build an underground wall. They shoot missiles over the wall, you build Iron Dome anti-missile system. You don't take the war to your enemy. You just constantly build better defenses and wait them out, and you deter them. And that failed. That completely collapsed. As far as the Jewish question, the American Jews are a good example here. America has been unbelievably good to its Jews for at least 100 years before the creation of America. So for 300 years, really since the beginning, America has been a utopia for Jews because the American idea and Jews really align very well. But as American progressives threaten the American idea, they threaten the security and safety of Jews in America. And suddenly, Jews are beginning to think a Holocaust could happen in America if these leftist progressives redefine America, because that sort of politics they advocate does lead to dehumanization,
eugenics.
Of population.
Yeah, it leads to eugenics. Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
So there's an inherent understanding now that if America's fiber, if its fundamental is threatened, so too is the Jewish community now an existential danger in America.
And that's why it's so concerning to Christians and what the FBI is doing. Don, you and I have talked about it here.
Correct.
You know, with going after the Catholic Church, with going after pro-lifers, those kinds of things, with going after J6ers who were there, many of whom were just praying and worshiping and praising God and asking for God's intervention into this nation. And now they're all facing jail terms as a result. POWs right here in our own country. It concerns all of us. Go ahead, David. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but you know, again, there's this fairly substantial progressive Jewish community that is progressive in their religion, not Jewish, and they've imagined and they continue to imagine that somehow this doesn't threaten them and that actually progressivism in the end will be good. And this is exactly like those Jews that surrounded Stalin and Lenin and so forth, that in until the doctor's plot, when they were all rounded up and shot anyway. They just right. don't get it, because progressivism is inherently anti-Jewish. But they imagine it's, you know,
it's anti-God. Yeah. At the end, I mean, the bottom line is it's anti-God. That's what they're after. It's anti-God. Yeah. And that makes it yeah. anti-Jewish, because the root of Judaism is the God of the Bible, period. That's the root.
Yeah. There's also an old Hungarian Jewish expression that we Jews always overperform, even in stupidity.
Yeah. All right.
May I ask another question?
Yeah, and I want to make sure we get in. We got about 10 minutes.
Okay. I just wanted to know what David's thoughts. Do the Jews understand, does Israel understand the fallacy of the two-state system and why it is so destructive?
Absolutely. I mean, this is where when Blinken, and he's there right now giving, Antony Blinken, Secretary of State, is there right now giving a speech in Israel about the necessity of a two-state solution. And as far as the Israelis are concerned, if they had gone along with that and actually all the pressures and everything that it would lead to a two-state solution would have happened before October 7th, Israel would have been destroyed, because 80% of Israel's population is within 5 kilometers of the West Bank. So, or at most 10 kilometers, which is as far as Hamas got in the Gaza envelope area, which means 80% of Israel's population could have been slaughtered had it given up on the West Bank, let alone the fact that Gaza still would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not Lebanon. So Israelis suddenly realize there is no coming to terms with the danger posed by the Palestinians. By the way, one other thing about Israelis, they don't believe it's just Hamas. They believe that the Palestinians as a whole support Hamas. No, not all Israelis are saying expel them or whatever. But there is a realization. Deterrence doesn't work, and they're out to kill you as a people, not just as a small organization like Hamas.
They haven't kept that a secret.
Yeah, and whatever security arrangements, therefore, Israel has to make, it has to basically be in on the ground to prevent happening. You can't go further than where Israel is, essentially. I think that whole world of delusion, the two-state solution under Abu Mazen being a moderate and you deter the rest, that all has collapsed in Israel, and the entire spectrum has moved to the right, not just the center point, but the entire spectrum has moved to the right.
All right. We've got about 8 minutes left, David. There are two countries now that have declared war on Israel. Talk to us about the significance of those two countries. And then you mentioned to me that there's been an assault that has been launched from Lebanon that is equal to the level of the assault that was launched from Gaza on October 7th.
There was an attempt. There was. Let me start with the last point first. Okay. On October 7th, 25 thrusts by Hamas were launched against Israel that punched through and did the massacre. Yesterday, Hezbollah tried to launch along 16 points of axis. But the Israelis are ready, so they never even crossed the border. In fact, most never even got to the border. So the Israelis pretty much obliterated that attack immediately. And there was an escalated level of missiles and anti-tank missiles also from Lebanon and concur with that. So it's a very tense border in the north. It's a very active, hot border. Israelis are being injured. Lately, not that many killed, but injured. Hezbollah is losing a lot of people. So that's that. Now, the threat from the other countries, Algeria and Yemen are the two countries that have declared war in the last 48 hours. They are both. Yemen is acting on it by shooting missiles and drones at Israel, the same drones you see crashing into Kiev and so forth. But Israel's shooting them all down. Actually, the Saudis shot one or two down, and the U.S. Navy shot one or two down about 2 weeks ago. But Israel now is shooting most of them down over the Red Sea or even over Saudi Arabia, which shows the level of cooperation between Israel and Saudi Arabia. But where Yemen is a threat for Israel is the southern entry to the Red Sea in the port of Eilat. Israel shipping to Asia goes through there, also through the Suez Canal. So all of Israel's sea lines of communication to Asia are threatened by Yemen, which can cut off the Bab el-Mandeb Straits. On the other end, Algeria certainly has missiles that it could send to Israel. I'm not sure they will. But Algeria can threaten Israeli shipping coming in through the Straits of Gibraltar and from Northern Europe, which is a lot. So you're seeing an attempt slowly to choke Israel off by seaborne threats. Again, how realistic Algeria is, I think the real threat of Algeria is Morocco is at peace with Israel. Algeria hates Morocco. So this could be a pretext for Algeria to attack Morocco, which is a Western-oriented Arab country at peace with Israel. This is a strategic move possibly by Iran to threaten through Algeria and Russia and China to threaten Morocco. And, of course, Morocco is the other half of the Straits of Gibraltar. So you're seeing a real strategic play here via Algeria.
Is Algeria being manipulated, do you think, by Iran?
I think they're in alliance with Iran. I think partly manipulated, partly just alliance. Algeria has been a big problem. They've always been very close to Iran, always had good relations with Iran. They've been one of the more radical Arab states, very, very nasty at times to others. They've also been supporting essentially some of these Islamist organizations that operated in Libya and Tunisia and Morocco. They were very active with the Soviet Union in threatening Morocco in the Sahel region, in southwest Morocco, trying to use that to go at Morocco. So this is an old, they're part of the old Russian orbit, like Syria was and Iraq was under Saddam.
What's the significance then of the assault on Morocco as it relates to Israel and the situation in the Middle East?
Well, again, if Morocco is threatened and you know, God forbid they bring down the Moroccan government in some way, then the Straits of Gibraltar are impassable, which means all shipping to the Mediterranean from Europe or from the Americas is halted. And that begins to become a horrible problem. The second big problem that can obtain is that about 30% of the gas imported into Europe, which now is already under great stress because of the Russian situation, goes through Algeria. It originates in one point in Algeria, in fact, in Hass El Rmel, down in the south of Algeria. So Europe's gas is threatened profoundly by Algerian behavior. And so you could see that leveraged as right. well.
So and America right now has ships in the Mediterranean Sea, correct?
It does. It has two carrier battle groups there now. Naples is, of course, the home of the fleet. So yes, the Americans have a very heavy presence in the Mediterranean, which frankly worries me a little bit. I understand that America needs those ships there to evacuate civilians if it needs to, but I'm very worried about how stressed we are out in Asia and other places. And I'm very afraid, you know, one has to understand what Iran is doing is part of the context of a larger axis that stretches from Pyongyang and Beijing all the way over to Caracas, and now, unfortunately, Bogota, Brasilia, and Santiago in Latin America, and all these countries in between, whether it's Algeria or Gaza or Iran or Syria or Hezbollah in Lebanon. This is all part of one large grouping that is now on the move against the West as a whole. So if we put all our attention now in the Mediterranean and the Red Sea, I'm very worried that the Far East could be stretched thin, and then you could see something happen there in Korea or Taiwan or so forth. So I frankly think that the administration is putting all these forces there to try to deter Hezbollah and Iran from entering the war, because they still hope there's some diplomatic solution to this at the end, rather than basically tell the Israelis, look, if you have to take them on, we're behind you. You just anchor the Western interests in the Middle East right now. You worry about yourself. We'll help right. you. We'll give you weapons, whatever. But you worry about yourself.
Right.
We need to worry about the world. And we're not doing that. We're doing the opposite. We're basically trying to tell the Israelis, hold it, just restrain yourself. We'll take care of some of you. Just please restrain yourself. And I think it's the inverse of what we ought to be doing.
All right. We're at the end of our time. The Gibraltar, the concern, as I'm looking at it, is that's the only entry point into the Mediterranean Sea. So if that's blocked, they literally have cut off our fleet, and our fleet becomes stranded in the Mediterranean until it fights its way out. That's a very dangerous predicament for us to be in.
Stability of Morocco is an absolute for Western security.
Yeah, yeah.
Do I have time for one more question?
Well, we're right at our end. No.
My quick question was: what does David see as a governing force when Hamas is defeated in Gaza?
Israeli occupation and then reconsidering what happens over time. I think right now it's just back to the pre-2005 situation where right. Israel controls it directly.
Yeah, you can't turn it over to Fatah, that's for sure. Dr. Wormser, thank you for being with us today. Don, thank you so much. Folks, thank you for being with us. We're going to go live now to India. Chaps is waiting for me right there in India in his hotel room. So I'm going to be jumping to that right after this brief break. We'll be back with more Chosen Generation Radio coming up right after this. Hi, this is Pastor Greg, and you're listening to Chosen Generation Radio. Get more at ChosenGenerationRadio.com. That's Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any difference. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear. Even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. Retailers, shopping channels, and now even banks have tried to cancel myself and MyPillow. Well, during these times, your support has meant everything to us. So my employees and I want to personally thank each and every one of you by passing the savings directly on to you. We're selling the best products ever for the best prices ever. For example, we have my standard size MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Or you can get custom fit with my premium queen-size MyPillows, regularly $79.98, now just $29.98. Or my king-size regular $89.98, now just $34.98. So go to MyPillow.com now and use the promo code on your screen or call the 1-800 number below to receive this exclusive offer. If you do it right now, I'm going to include a free gift with your purchase. Thank you and God bless.
So up next, we have ClanSlate. When you have different things like cancer and different diseases that are autoimmune related, it can really help with inflammation because you're helping clean the body. And ClanSlate is a formula that's made from a natural orthosilic acid that basically is put into a formulation that's naturally occurring that uses different processes from polarization to heating to cooling to different types of catalysts, which will go in the body and really help communicate to get rid of those things that don't need to be there. People don't understand why there's so many autoimmune disorders, but our environment's toxic. The land, air, and water have changed. We've been exposed to nuclear war, and the issue is if there's a nuclear bomb or there's pollution or there's war in one country, it actually affects everything up to the stratosphere. So we're all connected, and we've really got to clean things out.
You can pick up your clean slate today at cgrforlife.com. That's cgrforlife.com. Pick up your clean slate today.
You can support Chosen Generation and make a tax-deductible donation by visiting www.chosengenerationradio.com. And now, back to Chosen Generation with Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. I'm your host, Pastor Greg. Again, active in prayer for Israel. As we discussed with Dr. Wormser, Algeria now has joined Yemen in declaring war on Israel. And Algeria's ulterior motive may well be to attack Morocco, which would close the Straits of Gibraltar, which would strand our fleets in the Mediterranean Sea, having to fight their way out and not being able to clearly get out in order to address any Asian activity that China might start, either with Taiwan or with Japan. Very, very serious situation. All right, here we go. Very pleased to welcome my next guest. He is, of course, a regular here on a monthly basis with us. And today, we have a very special treat because he is with us live from India. And I want to welcome to the program Gordon Chaps Klingensmith. Chaps, welcome. Good to have you. Thanks for being here.
God bless you, Pastor Greg. And I am honored to reach. It is 8 p.m. here in India Standard Time, and it's 10:30 on the East Coast. So that means there's actually a half hour extra. India feels like they own the middle of the hour, plus, 8 hours to get to this point. It's fascinating to see such a unique culture, and I love all of the people of India. I have been here for about 3 weeks already, and I will be one more week, and then I return to America next week. I am here as part of a conference, a delegation from America for peace with India, but also for the gospel. And we are serving orphans and children in the name of Jesus, and we are feeding the poor and trying to raise money to build an agriculture school, a trade school that will also teach electrician or plumbing or auto mechanic or beautician or nursing assistant, so that the slum kids can have a job and a skills trade so they can get out of the slums. And if you teach a man to fish, they will eat for a lifetime. We are now feeding and training almost 1,000 orphans and children in the northeastern state of Orissa. Now it's called Odisha. It's on the coast, on the northeast, under Calcutta. And I've been doing this now for 11 years, so this is my fifth trip to India. Five times I've been here, and I try to come for a month each time, and God is blessing the work and blessing the pastors with our support.
That's awesome. That is really, really awesome. Now, so there we go. There's India, and let me zoom down on it. So that is in the state of Orissa, you said?
Yes. It used to be Orissa, now it's Odisha, but it's the same area. And there's about 30 sub-districts, or like I think of them as counties, in Odisha. And we are active in all 30 counties. So I'm here with Sister Audrey Beckett, who is our partner from Colorado Springs. And she is helping to fund some of the leaders there. And I'm helping to fund some of the children there. And together we are in transition. She's been active in India for 35 years. I've only been for 11 years, but we're kind of passing the torch so I can continue her legacy.
Well, praise God. Now that is, you said, in the northeast.
Well, along the coast, right? If you go up the east coast all the way to the top, you'll hit Calcutta. If you back up an inch, you'll see the state of Odisha.
Ah, okay. All right. So when I'm thinking about north, I'm thinking about the areas near Jammu and Kashmir, and Punjab.
No. You are so, in the west.
I'm in the far, far north.
Yeah, where the Himalayas have snow. Actually, there's almost no snow anywhere in India except your region up in Kashmir. They're more like right. Nepal. When I saw Mount Everest last year, I was in Kathmandu for a week in Nepal. They have beautiful mountainscapes and beautiful snow. Sometimes it comes down to the city of Kathmandu, but in India, there's almost no snow in anywhere because it's semi-tropical. It's really a southern climate. The furthest north state still feels like Florida to me.
Gotcha. Now, I'm curious, as you're, visiting with the people over there, are they at all engaged in conversation about what's happening with Israel and what's happening over in that part of the world?
I don't think so, because it's not in the newspapers. And with 1.5 billion people here, India has now passed China as the most populated nation. But it is largely Hindu. And so they're not paying attention to the Muslim-Jewish conflict or the American politics of that. America is deeply invested in Israel. And India is a partner with Israel. They certainly trade and they are friends because they were both liberated around the same time but from the British, 1947, 1948. Mm-hmm. They each became independent nations from formerly British colonies. But now, you know, besides a casual awareness of what's happening, most Indians are busy about their jobs. And the Hindu government here is a radical government, right, and they are anti-Islam, which is, you know, I'd say India is still 10% Muslim, but the government is against them. So there's anti-Muslim persecution from the government, which is Hindu. There's anti-Christian persecution from the government, which is Hindu. And I think if India as a nation had to take sides, they would stand with Israel and not with, let's say, Palestine.
Not with Islam, right, absolutely. Well, and because I know they have, you know, up in the north where I'm involved in ministry, they have the conflict with Pakistan over Punjab, because there is a Punjab that is Pakistan and there is a Punjab that is India, and that's actually a disputed state. So there's a lot of tension between Pakistan and India on that particular border. You were talking about what's happening down in your area. Are you hearing anything more about the attacks that took place in India against Christians, which I believe was a bit north of where you are? Is that correct?
Yeah, in the furthest east. There's like five states to the very far east, which the state of Manipur is where recent violence has broken out against Christians. And as we reported on a previous episode with you, now 50,000 Christians have been driven out of their homes there. The refugees are piling up in the seminary where I have taught lectures in Manipur, in the city of Churchampur, because 41% of that state is Christian. And the rest is Hindu who hate the Christians. But there was political tension over minority rights, and the government was actually favoring minorities, and that upset the Hindus. So then the Hindus in the Nazi party, we call it the RSS, partnered with, and I think with state sponsorship from the BJP, which is their mainline political party, like the Republican Party in America. But over here, it's radical Hindu, aligning with the hard right nationalists that are anti-Christian. And so the federal government is not helping because that is Hindu. The state government is participating against the genocide against Christians in Manipur. And now they are all being, some of them are killed, but most of them are being persecuted to give up their land. So they have to migrate and they have to find refuge, and if they dare to go back to their original ancestral farmland, they are being killed or threatened. And I think over 200 churches there have been destroyed.
And this is, if I'm looking at the map and reading this correctly, this is to the southeast of New Delhi.
No. Manipur is in the far east, almost next to Thailand.
You know, that's where I thought that it was, but for some reason, when I put Manipur in, the only thing that the map is giving me is in Uttar Pradesh, but it's pointing to it being near Agra, which I didn't think was right.
Even close. I think you're maybe the spelling is off, or you're looking at a city in UP, but the state of Manipur, Manipur, is definitely in the northeast. There's also a state over there called Nagaland, which is largely Christian, very peaceful. The people actually look sort of Asian and not Indian there. You know, they have slanty eyes and Asian features, and they're very educated. Many of them speak very good English, but they're also very agriculture based and very impoverished. They are for all of their attempts, they are not felt like they're not integrated so much with India because they don't look the same. They don't always talk the same. There are, I think, over 3,000 languages spoken all over India. And, of course, they have their own dialects and languages in Manipur. But the national language is English. So anywhere you go in India, you can probably find somebody who speaks English. And all of the schools require English language. But the problem is many children don't go to school. And what happens to the orphan kids or the slum kids that we are feeding when they can't pass their exams because they haven't passed any literacy test? They can't get into a junior college even. So after 10th standard, after 10th grade, they kind of age out and they're on the streets. And there are almost no jobs for the slum children of Odisha, where I'm serving. So we're trying to build an agricultural trade school that will give them jobs or give them skills that they could use to apply for employment and build up Odisha, build up the economy, and build up the Christian community so we can become a light in the darkness. And the gospel will be welcomed instead of persecuted because we are the ones feeding their children. We are the ones caring for and educating their children. And they're beginning to love the Christians. And many Hindus are respecting the faith more than they did persecute, 15 years ago.
We're finding that we've been able to do that up in Punjab, especially we were doing it during the pandemic because we were handing out groceries at our gatherings and we didn't make it, it wasn't you had to accept Jesus in order to get groceries. Everybody got groceries. And we found that by going out there and doing that, that the Hindu prelates who were over those particular areas were receptive and gave us permission. We were one of the only ministries during that whole 2 years that was out in Punjab actually, being allowed to be able to do that. But it had a lot to do with working with them. And we even had Hindu leadership that donated for the wells, some of the wells, 12 of the wells that we did. The parts for those wells were actually donated by a Hindu, government representative who saw the good works that we were doing. So there is that opportunity, but then there's also the persecution as well, which is why we have the sewing school for widows.
Yeah, it's important to serve the widows, not just the orphans. We feed almost 1,000 orphans here. But we just helped to finish. We put a roof on a brand new building that had been financed 90%, but we put in the last 10% to build a widow's home in Odisha. And I was there and visited with them, and I met the widows. Now we're just waiting for the government permits so they can move into the finished building. And, of course, the Hindus are slow rolling the government approvals.
Sure.
And so we're going to have to plead with them or apply a little bit more political pressure to open up a home for older women who they're begging on the streets and if they're in unsafe conditions or they're with family members who don't want them. And sometimes they're beaten and abandoned, but we will take them because Jesus loves the widow. I like to say, as part of my testimony, I was an orphan when I was a child and I was, for 45 years, I was raised by my adoptive family. But then at the end of my life, I was reunited with my birth mother who had become a widow. Mm. And so when Jesus was dying on the cross, he said maybe six things. One thing he said, John, this is your mother. Mary, this is your son. Now here's John and Mary. They're two adults who don't really know each other as mother and son. But for the rest of their lives, they are joined as mother and son. And this proves to me that Jesus loves the widow. In this case, it was Mary, his mother, but he's there dying on the cross, and his last thought is to make sure that she is cared for by his favorite disciple, John. So we're trying to do that in Odisha. We're going to be feeding or housing about 100 widows in our new home, and they still need funding for that. They don't have any beds right now, but if someone wants to pitch in, we'll make sure the money goes directly. You can contribute through prayinjesusname.org. Our website is prayinjesusname.org.
Yeah, we've been focused on the younger widows whose husbands were murdered, and they have small children. and they have been having to go into the homes of the wealthy Indians in order to clean and take care of. But unfortunately, the men in those homes know that these women do not have a husband to protect them, and so there are regular occurrences of sexual assaults, and there's not anything that's done about it. So our response to that was to create the sewing schools so that we could teach them how to sew so they wouldn't have to go into those homes anymore. And we've got 24 widows that we're getting ready to graduate here this next month. But we're still in the process of raising the funds. We have to, we give each one of them a sewing machine. It's $65 for a sewing machine, actually 66 now. But we give each one a brand new sewing machine. They spend 4 months and they learn how to sew. We might want to talk about that relative to what you guys are doing down there as a means to help fund what's going on.
Absolutely. If your donors or supporters want to help us buy sewing machines, we already have the tailors in place that are teaching that skill. We already have been doing similar work for Audrey Beckett has been doing that for 35 years. But it's important for women who are alone. If they don't have a husband, they need a skill. Yeah. And sewing is something they can do peacefully, and it's a blessing to their neighbors.
Yeah.
And they put a little gospel tract in every sari that they make in the pocket. They'll preach the gospel. And the person who receives the sari when they buy it, they're not only helping the widow, but they're receiving the message of Christ, and it's a great outreach.
Powerful, powerful stuff. How much longer are you going to be in India, chaps?
One more week. I'm here in Kerala today in the southwest coast. This 2 days ago, I was at a wedding on the east coast in a town called Vijayawada in Andhra Pradesh. But today I'm in Kerala at a conference with other Christian interested ministers. And then I go to Hyderabad for 3 days, different church meeting there. And then I go back to Bhubaneswar to meet with the engineers and architects who are building on our land. If I could hold up this map, I don't know if your television viewers can see this because it's kind of a green screen problem here. But this is a map of the land that we have purchased in a particular region in Bhubaneswar. You can see the green is land that we've already purchased, about 3 acres there. The pink is for sale. That's about 2 acres. We don't have the money to buy that yet. But for another 200,000, you know, we're paying about 100,000 an acre because it's city land, but it's on the edge. So it's agriculture based. And we're going to teach agriculture. And on the 9th, I'm meeting with engineers and architects from EMI, Engineering Ministries International. They have offices in Colorado Springs, where I live, and Delhi, here at the Capitol. But they're flying out to see our land and to design the buildings. We want to build 5 buildings on paper. They will design all the blueprints, the plans, the architecture plans, the size, and maybe a cost estimate. And they will give it to us, and the entire campus will be constructed, but only on paper. And then of course, we need the donations to build the $2.5 million trade school that we have envisioned. We've raised about 20% of those funds, so we have $500,000 in the bank for this project. But we want to start really building some of the buildings next summer and then finish within 5-year plan of $2.5 million on a 5-acre campus.
Praise God. That's awesome. And that's going to be helping the people in that area to be able to learn a trade. What's the population down there that you guys are reaching out to in that particular area?
Yeah, well, statewide, I think there's 30 million, or maybe that's just the city of Bhubaneswar. I think there might be 60 million in the state of Odisha. Our partners have 3,000 ministries reaching at least 100,000 for the gospel every year. So we're just a drop in the bucket. But I'm told that the world has 11,000 unreached people groups that have never heard the gospel in their own language. Mm-hmm. Well, Odisha is so rural and so tribal that 3,000 of the 11,000 in the world live in our state of Odisha. So we are training the pastors who go into the tribal villages with the gospel, and we're reaching many of those villages. For the first time, they're hearing the gospel in their native tongue, and eventually they'll have Bibles or New Testaments in their own language.
Punjab has a lot of that. That's where Pastor Samuel goes, where we set up. You were asking me as we were coming on air about adding to the church. Actually, we don't add to the church in Amritsar where we're based. We're going out into communities where they've never heard the gospel before. So, as for example, with regards to the meeting that we just had, we had about 90 people in attendance, and 69 of that 90 gave their lives to Christ. They'd never heard the gospel before.
Praise the Lord. This is a great evangelistic outreach, and yeah. I'm thankful for the... How does that work technically? They must bring a projector or a screen on the wall, and because yeah. you're here in Texas.
Yeah, so the way that it works is we have a laptop that is attached to a projector. The projector is projected onto a screen, and then from that screen... they see me, and then I share, and then I am able to see them. I'm putting up right now on the screen. And chaps, if you get a chance when I send you the link to this video, you'll see this. But that's a picture of me on the screen at the meeting that we had. That's a picture of the people that were there. And of course, we live stream this to our audience as well. And so our audience, but you, the audience actually, oh, that's my foot. You don't need to see my foot. The audience actually sees the people in India that are being ministered to. And so they're able to watch the people and their response to the sharing of my testimony and then the gospel message itself. It's really quite amazing, man. Quite amazing.
And you have translators, of course, because you're speaking English and then the translator puts it in their native tongue. And then yep. you have an altar call. So they're invited to come and receive Jesus as Savior and Lord. And as you say, it's very effective for reaching the lost. We are not trying to convert anybody, but we are trying to share our testimony. You know, just our own personal story of how Jesus changed me. You mm-hmm. talk about how Jesus changed you. And what they decide to do is up to them. They are free to reject our message or receive Christ. Without the message, they don't even have the choice.
Yeah.
So sometimes if the government tries to silence you, they're the ones forcing conversion because they are not even allowing the speech. They're not even allowing any choices.
Yeah.
So they're restricting religious freedom. They are censoring the gospel. But we give people choices, and then it's up to them if they want to convert.
Hear, 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 hear. Chaps, thanks for being with me today. I greatly appreciate it. I know it's later there than it is here, but I really appreciate you taking the time to come in. And again, how cool is it that you can be there in India, I'm over here in America, and we're able to do this program together by the wonder of technology. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Okay, God bless you in Jesus' name. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. PrayInJesusName.org. If you'd like to support any of the projects that Chaps just talked about, please go to PrayInJesusName.org, and you'll be able to find the information necessary to be able to assist them in the incredibly awesome work that Chaps and their ministry is involved in over there. God bless you, sir. Appreciate you. All right.
Amen.
We're going to take our leave. Texas Fully Loaded is coming up here.